MechCast, Sunday, March 7th, 2021. Hey, MechGeeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for MechGeeks by MechGeeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the show. Yep, another week has gone by, another week of Apple and Mac news. I am so glad to be back here with you for another episode. Hopefully you are doing very, very well and things are going well in your life. Things are pretty good here in old MacCast land. Just looking through the show notes, it looks like we've got a lot of things to get into, a lot of things to talk about. We're going to kick things off with a bunch of Apple iPhone 13 rumors. Got a lot of stuff to talk about there. Lots of things going on. Jump into some Apple TV Plus news. Little conversations about, maybe one of those sports ball things. We also got some new shows to talk about and some awards and accolades for Apple TV and a little information on a show that helped kind of boost some of their numbers. So it was a pretty exciting week for Apple TV Plus news. We're also going to get into some Apple Store news, specifically for the U.S. Going to talk about some new information related to Find My and device tracking. And guess what? It's not what you think. It's going to be a little bit surprising. Talk about OLED displays. We've got a ton of what I'm calling odds and ends, a bunch of little stories happening this week that I think are pretty interesting. So we'll talk about those. And we'll round things out for the news with some AR VR headset updates, little updates to the timeline on when we might be seeing those products. So we'll talk about that. And then we're going to get to some of your feedback. Got a little bit of feedback on Apple Mail stuff. Also have an Apple Mail question. We're going to talk about what I call the CarPlay paradox. That's related to something that I talked about on a previous episode of the MacCast. I'll explain what that is a little bit later in the show. We're going to help a listener out with some issues with their mail. They have a question about the mail app, and we'll get into some troubleshooting stuff too. I want to talk about a dilemma that we, I think, get into when we're trying to help people troubleshoot and find things. And I have a really great example that I received from email this week that I think is a lot of fun. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll round things out with a thing of the moment this week. I got a cool tip from a member of the MacCast community, actually a supporter over on Patreon. And we'll talk about his pick, and it should be a great show. I'm pretty excited about it, so I think we should just dive right in. So let's talk about iPhone 13 and some rumors. I know we've been talking about a lot about iPhone 13 rumors, but we got a new one this week coming from a Wedbush analyst who claims that the iPhone 13 could finally bring a 1 terabyte storage option to the Pro iPhone models. That's something Apple has done on the iPads. That may finally make its way to the iPhone. He also says that all of this year's iPhones are going to have LiDAR scanners in them across the entire lineup. Now, the storage option actually is something we've heard of before from Apple leaker John Prosser. He claimed that Apple would offer 1 terabyte storage options on this year's iPhones as well. So got two different sources saying the same thing, which bodes well for this rumor. Now, there may be some of you out there that are thinking, Adam, you know, I have 256 gigabytes and I'm not even close to using up that storage, or I have 512, not even close to using up that storage. What could you possibly do with 1 terabyte of storage on your phone? And the thought right now is that with the new Pro RAW options for taking photos, those photos take up about 10 to 12 times more space than the HEIF or JPEG files that us mere mortals, you and I, probably take. So think iPhone Pro photographers, Pro videographers who are shooting in 4K. Yeah, they need a lot of storage to fit all of that stuff. So they would very much welcome a 1 terabyte Pro iPhone option in terms of storage. So that's where it's going. We also have that LiDAR sensor in there. We'll talk about that here in a second. As far as sales and iPhone 13, what's going to happen? A lot of people thinking that There's still a lot of folks looking to get in on the 5G bandwagon. 5G deployments and rollouts are going pretty well for the carriers, getting more expansion, more availability of 5G. So it's looking like this year's iPhone 13 will bring another stellar year for Apple. It should do very well, and there's a lot of excitement around it. Now, analyst Ming-Chi Kuo continues to update his investors as well with his iPhone predictions for 2021. He's saying right now that he's expecting Apple to bring the 120Hz ProMotion displays to the iPhone, along with low-power LTPO display technology. So that'll be a little bit more energy efficient, better for the batteries as far as design. And models, he's thinking Apple's going to have the same four models and sizes that they did last year. That includes the iPhone Mini. iPhone Mini, as you may remember, we've talked about, seemed a little bit in jeopardy because it really hasn't been selling well. Apple will probably just adjust the volumes down a little bit and keep it in the lineup, which I think is a great thing because there is a market, small as it may be, for a smaller sized, you know, modern iPhone. Of course, we have phones like the iPhone SE, and we'll talk about that in a little bit too. Other predictions that Ming-Chi Kuo is making, he's saying that this year's models will have a smaller notch. And then interestingly, he goes to contradict one of his own previous rumors and says that this year's models will have lightning connectors all the way around. He had previously hinted that one Pro model this year could be going portless, ditching the Lightning port completely. But right now he's saying that's not going to happen, claiming that basically the MagSafe ecosystem just is not mature enough yet to make that next step. I think there's some other big reasons why Apple might not go portless with the iPhone, and we'll talk about that later in the show. He also says all of this year's models are going to feature Qualcomm's Snapdragon X60 modem. I think we talked about that in the last episode of the MacCast. Big update on this one is that it can aggregate 5G data from both the millimeter wave and the sub 6 gigahertz bands simultaneously. So a little bit more connectivity and access and speed and advantages of kind of both parts of those spectrums if they are available. So nice little update to the internal modems. He also says this year's models will be slightly heavier, and that is due to larger batteries. So you're thinking larger batteries, more efficient displays, that's going to translate into longer battery life, and that's always a good thing too. We're also hearing about some potential upgrades to the ultra-wide angle lens. Apple planning to add autofocus and sensor shift optical image stabilization. Now, you may be thinking, don't we already have autofocus and image stabilization? You would be correct, but that would be on the wide-angle lens, not the ultra-wide lens. The ultra-wide lens is currently fixed focus and does not have image stabilization. And the big thing here, too, is that it would add the sensor shift optical image stabilization, which is where it actually adjusts the sensor versus moving the lens. And basically the advantage here is right now with fixed focus for ultra wide shots, you can take wide angle shots, which are typically landscapes, and that's not really a problem for it to be fixed focused. But if you want to do kind of closer wide angle shots, you're going to want that optical image stabilization and the autofocus. So that'll be a nice little update to Apple's camera system on the iPhone. Getting back to that LiDAR technology again, earlier report said that there would be LiDAR scanners across the entire lineup. Ming-Chi Kuo thinks a little bit differently about that. He still thinks the LiDAR scanners will only be available on the iPhone 13 Pro models. Now, moving back to other options for iPhone, Ming-Chi Kuo, looking past 2021, says that Apple does plan to update their iPhone SE model, but that for now, it seems like the updates might not be here until at least the last half of this year, probably more likely, though, happening in early 2022. As far as what will be in the iPhone SE update, he is expecting Apple to move them to 5G along with the rest of the iPhone lineup, and that they will update it with new processors. As far as design, he says that will remain largely unchanged from the current 4.7-inch iPhone SE model, which has adopted its design from the iPhone 8. So don't expect that to change too much. But he says the user experience could be improved if Apple would adopt a Touch ID power button instead of using the Touch ID home button, just like they did for the iPad. But there currently is no indication of when or if Apple actually plans to do that. I think that would actually be a really nice update. Would also allow them to potentially make the screen larger, getting rid of that kind of chin at the bottom that they need to have for the home button. And I guess now that I think about it, if they maintain the aspect ratio, they could potentially push the screen out a little bit and make the phone just a hair smaller, not quite as tall. So that would be a nice little update as well. But again, no specific plans for Apple, or at least no rumors that Apple specifically is working on something like that. Moving back to the Pro models, Quo thinks that in 2022, Apple may adopt a punch hole design for the camera, at least on some of the models, very likely the Pro models. What is not clear about his statement relating to that is exactly how will that work with the other components Apple needs to power Face ID. Now, they could move away from Face ID because we have been hearing Apple has been looking at under the display fingerprint technology. So maybe we move away from Face ID back to Touch ID. But personally, I don't know if I could give up Face ID. I really like that technology, even if the Touch ID under display was as good as the original Touch ID. And that remains to be seen as well. So interesting to think that Apple could do that. We know they have been looking at under display camera technologies, so maybe those sensors can actually work under display, some of the ones required for the Face ID technology. But if it happens, it may happen in 2022, at least according to Quo. And then finally, one last little iPhone related rumor we heard about this week. This one again from John Prosser over at YouTube. Actually, he made this statement on a podcast recently. He said that the rumored upcoming MagSafe battery pack that Apple is supposedly working on and getting ready to release sometime soon may possibly come in two different versions, a standard version and a premium version that would offer bilateral charging, meaning that you could attach the MagSafe battery pack to your phone and it would charge your phone, and then you could use the back of that power pack to charge another device like an Apple Watch or your AirPods, maybe even another iPhone. And this was a rumor we had heard that it might be a technology that could have been built directly into the phone itself this year, this sort of dual charging or bilateral charging, as they call it. And it sounds like a cool technology. It'd be a great way to like top up your AirPods if you weren't near, a power connector or didn't have access to that. You're just out and about. Great way to maybe recharge up your Apple Watch as well. So could be pretty handy for a battery pack. I'm thinking, though, why not just detach the battery pack and just allow it to charge other Qi compatible devices. Seems like you could use it that way as well. So it's an interesting rumor. I don't know if I'd pay a little bit extra to have bilateral charging on my battery pack or not. What do you think? Let me know, maccast@gmail.com. But that's kind of the latest on what we've been hearing this past week regarding iPhone. Moving on to some Apple TV Plus news. As you know, there's a lot of folks looking at Apple TV Plus and thinking that Apple needs to do some things to bring in some subscribers. And one area that Apple hasn't really delved into is too much, actually, is sports. I guess they've got, sports content through some of their channel partners. But as far as actually on their Apple TV Plus service, they really don't have much. I think they did a sports documentary, but that was about it. And what about live sports? Well, you may remember before Apple announced the service, we had heard that they had been talking to the NFL about potentially getting some NFL games during the regular season, maybe Thursday Night Football. Well, this week, we're starting to hear those rumors again. Does feel like a little bit of a long shot. The gist here is that most, if not all, of the NFL's media contracts are going to be up for renewal this year. And things like NFL Sunday Ticket and Thursday Night Football could potentially be up for grabs, and maybe Apple could pick that up. The reason is that DirecTV is expected to not renew their out-of-market contract for NFL Sunday Package, and Apple could be on the list to pick it up. Now, there's no indication that they are going to do that beyond speculation at this point, but for sure, it could be a potentially great way for Apple to drive up Apple TV Plus subscriptions. As far as what seems most likely, I guess they could go for either package. Thursday Night Football feels like something that Apple could get, especially considering the fact that that is usually a multi-channel deal. Right now, I think ESPN and Amazon have it, or it might be Fox and Amazon. And the deal breaker here could be whether or not the NFL wants to do a exclusive deal, and the partner for the exclusive deal would be responsible for production. Obviously, Apple and Apple TV Plus probably isn't set up to do that, so that may be the deal breaker for them. So it remains to be seen, but it could end up being, if it's non-exclusive, folks like ESPN Plus, Amazon, and Apple kind of sharing those broadcasts. Sunday, NFL Sunday Package, I guess, is another one that they could pick up, and we'll have to just wait and see if that's something Apple really wants to bid on. They haven't really done too much with live TV, so it'd be interesting to see them do that. And again, I think this would help really add some subscriber numbers to their service. But what do you think about that? Do you think Apple should go after this? They certainly have the deep pockets, and it's something they could bring to their Apple TV Plus service. Sticking with Apple TV Plus news for a little bit, Apple has signed an order for a new series called Roar. It's described as an anthology series of darkly comic feminist fables. It's going to star Nicole Kidman, Cynthia Erivo, Merritt Weaver, and Allison Brie. The show is coming from the creators of GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, Liz Flahive, and Carly Mensch. The series will be a season of 8 half-hour episodes, and it is based on a book of short stories by Cecilia Ahern. Apple TV Plus got a nice little bump in viewers this past week with the release of the Billie Eilish documentary, Billie Eilish, The World's a Little Blurry. Deadline is reporting that Apple saw a 33% bump in new viewers to the service after the launch of the new documentary. Most of the new viewers are also in the very desirable young adult demographic, so that's good news for Apple. We'll have to wait and see if they stick around, though, but the Russo Brothers film Cherry, starring Tom Holland, which is coming out soon, might just keep them around. Apple has also signed a series order for a Korean language show based on the popular Korean webtoon Dr. Brain. The series will be written and directed by filmmaker Kim Yi-woon and features Lee Sun-kyun, who is known for his role in Parasite. The show is described as, quote, an emotional journey that follows a brain scientist who is obsessive about figuring out new technologies to access the consciousness and memories of the brain. We are currently in the thick of TV and movie award show season, and Apple TV Plus shows and films are up for even more awards this week. In the Annie Awards for animation, the movie Wolfwalkers, which is produced by Cartoon Saloon and Melusine Productions, is up for a staggering 10 awards, including Best Animated Feature. Also, Apple's children's TV series Stillwater earned one nomination for Best Preschool Episode. Moving over to the world of sci-fi, Apple has a number of shows up for Saturn Awards. They received nominations for All Mankind, Servant, and Amazing Stories. For All Mankind has been nominated for Best Fantasy Television Series, Servant nominated for Best Horror Television Series, and Amazing Stories has been nominated for Best Television Presentation Under 10 Episodes. And then finally, a couple of wins for Apple TV Plus show Ted Lasso. It walked away with 3 Critics' Choice Awards, including winning the award for Best Comedy Series. Jason Sudeikis also won for Best Actor in a Comedy Series following his win at the Golden Globes. And his co-star, Hannah Waddington, won for Best Supporting Actress in a Comedy Series. So Apple shows doing pretty well in their first year at the awards. As we move into season two on a lot of these episodes, these are great shows. I recently started watching Servant and I got totally sucked into it. It has been great. And I am looking forward to all the new shows and stuff that are coming to Apple TV Plus. I also did check out the Billie Eilish documentary and I thought it was great. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So if you're looking for some stuff to watch over the next couple weeks, I would definitely recommend those two. I think for a lot of us, it's probably been a pretty long time since we've been able to head out to an Apple store. But this week, at least if you're in the U.S., that is about to change as things kind of get a little bit better and things start to open up a little bit more and more folks get vaccinated. As of March 1st, Apple has reopened all 270 Apple stores in the U.S., at least reopened in one way or another. More specifically, some are offering in-store shopping appointments, while others can accept express pickup for online orders only. Last week, Apple added a couple dozen more stores in California, Kentucky, New Jersey, New York, and Utah to their growing list of stores offering in-store shopping sessions. You'll probably want to check Apple's website to find out what level of availability your store has. Stores will continue to enforce health and safety guidelines, though. That includes reduced occupancy and a mask requirement, so be prepared for that. And they will continue to monitor and evaluate local conditions, so it is possible if things, you know, heat up again or get worse, we could see reclosures. But for now, you do have a chance to go into an Apple store, something that hasn't been possible for a little while. So we're definitely a far cry from being able to just pop down whenever we want and do some shopping, but at least this feels like a baby step to getting back to doing things the way that we used to. So any little progress I'll take at this point. And, if you missed the Apple store, now's your chance to maybe go back for a little bit and relive those memories. I don't often talk too much about the releases of Apple betas and sort of what's in them. I think because mainly I'd rather just wait for the new feature to come out and we talk about it then, because Apple can kind of change things and we never really know what's going to be in those beta releases. Actually, it's something I should throw out to you in the community. Would you be interested in me covering those things? There's a lot of stuff happening with betas, a lot of information, but I figure, you know, if it's not really a feature we can use or the majority of us can use yet, I just always figured it wasn't that interesting to you. So if you'd like to hear me cover more of this stuff, shoot me an email, maccast@gmail.com. But this week, there is kind of one interesting thing that came out in the third beta of iOS 14.5. Apple has officially opened up, at least in that beta, I say officially in air quotes, the Items tab in the Find My app. And you may remember we've talked about this in the past. There was kind of a secret way to access it. It is the tab that many folks believe is going to be enabled when Apple releases their AirTags product to allow you to track non-Apple devices. Basically, they're Bluetooth tracking tags like the Tile tags. What Apple is doing now in iOS 14.5 beta, though, is opening it up so you can register and add non-Apple devices to the Find My app. There's also, of course, speculation that this also means Apple's getting very close to announcing their AirTags. But for now, it looks like they're enabling the feature for third-party products. The reports have been mentioning Beats headphones and the new Belkin wireless earbuds that were announced at CES and were announced as compatible with the Find My app. Now, it's not 100% clear to me how the compatibility works. AirTags are expected to use ultra-wideband technology to help make finding your items a little bit more accurate, but I would imagine a lot like AirPods work. It could work with other products. I don't know if Apple has partnered with other companies like Belkin to kind of integrate the technology. It seems like that's what's going on, but we'll have to wait and see till there's an official announcement to get all of the details. Something else that was revealed with some of the new betas that have been released over the last week or so, a disturbing message has appeared in the strings of the third beta of macOS 11.3, at least potentially disturbing if you own an M1 Mac and rely on Rosetta 2. This was discovered by Mac Rumors. They found two strings in the beta that state, quote, "Rosetta will be removed upon installing this update," and "Rosetta is no longer available in this region. Applications requiring Rosetta will no longer run." Now, it's not clear why these strings are in there and what regions might be impacted, or even when and if they will go into effect. But the assumption is that there could be some legal challenges and issues in certain regions surrounding the Rosetta technology, and Apple is just planning for that scenario. That would really stink, and I think Rosetta 2 technology, that's one of the big things that's allowing a lot of people to upgrade to new M1 machines earlier. So hopefully this isn't something that comes to fruition. Hopefully Apple's trying to work through any of the legal issues and legal challenges before they have to activate this, but it did show up in the beta, so it does mean that there's potentially something going on there. What do you think about this? I mean, would that be a deal breaker for you if suddenly you couldn't run older Mac apps in Rosetta on your new M1 machine? What would you do if you had one and this happened? It does not sound like a good situation at all. Again, hopefully it's something that Apple can avoid. Will 2021 be the year that Apple brings OLED displays to their non-iPhone, non-Apple Watch products? We've been hearing a lot about potential OLED displays for iPads and MacBook Pro models in the future. It's been going on for a while, but we have yet to see a product, and it sounds like now we may be waiting a little bit longer, possibly another year. Maybe more, at least according to DigiTimes and their assessment currently of the supply chain. There were signs that Apple might be shooting to have an OLED iPad Pro model out in the second half of 2021. We've talked about those rumors in the past, but now that does seem a little bit unclear. What is expected is that this year's iPad and MacBook Pro models will get mini LED backlit LCD displays. Good news there is that mini LCDs do offer a lot of the same benefits as OLED, with features like high brightness and high contrast, more energy efficiency, and they also do so without the risk of burn-in, something that OLED panels can suffer from. So depending on how they perform, I would think that there's a possibility Apple could even skip OLED and go straight to micro LED displays, which is another technology we've been hearing Apple is supposedly looking into. It's probably a little ways off, but maybe mini LED LCDs is that thing that could bridge that gap. Or maybe in 2022, we do finally see the release of OLED displays on iPads and MacBook Pros. So a lot of new display technologies kind of making their way through the rumors. What do you think about all these? Are you excited about mini LEDs? Is OLED something you'd like to see on your Macs? I have to say, our current LCD panels, I've been super happy with. I don't know if, an OLED display would be a game changer on my MacBook Pro or not. And I haven't seen many LED technology on an LCD yet either. So it's kind of hard to say, but, I think Apple has always been known for making great displays regardless of technology. So, I think it's a win-win. We benefit either way. But again, I'd love to know your opinion. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. Now we get to that potpourri section of the show that I told you about at the top of the episode. Our odds and ends, all the little stories that I didn't have a place for in this episode. Typically, I try and group things together in some sort of logical way, but there was just a lot of odds and ends this time around. But good stuff nonetheless. Starting off, we have the Australian Government's Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, approving the ECG function in the Apple Watch, finally after many years. So we might finally see that feature being made available to Apple Watch owners in Australia. We don't know when that's going to happen, but they've got the approval to move forward, so I would think that'll come out in an update sometime soon. Recent data from Counterpoint Research says that Apple has increased their Apple Watch shipments 19% year over year in the fourth quarter, shipping an estimated 33.9 million units. This is despite an overall decline in smartwatch shipments for the quarter. They also say that Apple was able to increase their global smartwatch market share dominance from 34% last year to 40% this year. So Apple Watch still the dominant player in smartwatches. There was supposedly a leaked image of a new Apple Pencil for the iPad Pro surfaced this week on Twitter from a user called Mr. White. Not really much to report here. It looks like an Apple Pencil, just like the current one. The main difference is that it seemed to have a glossy finish versus the matte finish. So it seemed to indicate that Apple might be looking to return to the styling of the original Apple Pencil 1 with the next generation, I guess, Apple Pencil 3? Who knows? Apple has also made it easier this week to transfer your iCloud photos over to Google Photo. Yeah, that's pretty cool. This is a new feature on Apple's privacy website. You can now transfer a copy of your photos to Google Photos, so it actually doesn't take them off the iCloud service, just rather transfers them over, creates a copy of them, puts them on Google Photos. The transfer process takes between 3 to 7 days, so it's not a quick process, and Apple will verify that the request was made by you. You also need to make sure you have two-factor authentication enabled on your Apple ID to be able to use the service, and of course, you must have enough storage over on Google Photos to make the transfer. It will only transfer the most recently edited version of a photo if it has been edited. Otherwise, it will transfer, of course, the original. And they will try to keep photos in your albums whenever possible, but it doesn't sound like that's a guarantee. And videos that are in albums will be transferred separately. The service is currently available to customers in Australia, Canada, the EU, Iceland, Liechtenstein, New Zealand, Norway, Switzerland, the United Kingdom, and the United States. So not quite available to everybody yet, but I would imagine this is a service Apple plans to roll out into more countries in the future. Apple says that the rumored new feature in iOS 14.5 that people have been reporting on, myself included, that would allow you to change the, quote, default music player in iOS to another service, a service other than Apple Music, is not the thing that you think it is. It's basically not the setting that you're looking for. In a statement to TechCrunch, Apple says that there's no specific setting in iOS where users can configure a default music service. So it's not like your browser, which you now have the ability to set, or your default mail client. They say what it actually is a Siri intelligence-based feature, and that Siri will ask you, or might ask you, you know, which player or service you want to open a piece of music in to listen to it, and it will try to remember that change and use that for the future, but there's no guarantee, and Apple says that change is not necessarily permanent, and you could be asked again, and it could change over time. So I am now, with this feature, going with what 9to5 Mac has suggested, and they said we should simply call it the Nebulous Siri audio feature. So that's coming in iOS 14.5. And then finally, sad news, if you were a fan of the iMac Pro, Apple has confirmed to Mac Rumors that the 27-inch iMac Pro is going to be discontinued. This was after it was noticed on Apple's store this past week that all of the custom configuration options for the iMac Pro had disappeared. They had been removed, and Apple had added text to the iMac Pro's product page on their website that said, "While supplies last." And right now, all they have available is the base model configuration, the $4,999 US configuration. And you can buy that, again, until supplies run out. And that is then supposedly it. Now, that said, we are expecting an iMac update. And Apple is expected to update to Apple Silicon versions of the iMac line this year. What'll be interesting to see is if Apple does have an iMac Pro as part of that lineup. It could get a little bit confusing because whatever processor they are designing for the iMac is probably going to feel a lot like a Pro processor. And so how they would make that distinction is really unclear. We've also got the rumors of a potential new Mini Pro desktop. So that could add in some model price confusion. Of course, the iMac is a very unique all-in-one design. So if that's something somebody wanted in a Pro form factor, it might make sense to continue that. But I think overall, Apple has probably not been super happy with sales of the iMac Pro, probably because it had, you know, not so inexpensive of a price tag. And they quickly kind of leapfrogged it with some of their other models. So, you know, I think its fate was sort of sealed. It'll be interesting to see if Apple wants to continue that line. They're obviously discontinuing it for now. And again, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. If you are one of the folks who really like the idea of an iMac Pro, or maybe if you think it should go away, I'd love to hear opinions both ways. Shoot me an email, send me an audio comment, maccast@gmail.com. And then finally, in the news for this week, we got some more information and a potential timeline on Apple's release of their AR/VR projects, this time coming from the latest research note from analyst Ming-Chi Kuo. He actually sees Apple's AR/VR projects as releasing in three phases, and he describes the first phase happening in 2022. He says three phases are, and he kind of names them based on the designs, the helmet type, which will come out in 2022, the glasses type, which will come out in 2025, and then the contact lens type, which he predicts might happen in 2030. Obviously speculating pretty far out, and a lot of things could change between now and then, but the first product is probably looking pretty likely just based on all the rumors we've been talking about here on the MacCast and looking at Ming-Chi Kuo's sort of lineup. He says the helmet version is basically the traditional VR type headset. It will have mixed augmented reality and virtual reality experiences. Kuo says later projects are likely going to focus solely on the augmented reality experiences. As far as what the traditional helmet style product will be in 2020, he mentions that if Apple can solve some technical problems, they hope to have a headset that will come in at a weight of about 100 to 200 grams. That would make it quite a bit lighter than some of the other products that are on the market, and definitely lighter than the current prototypes, which he says are about 200 to 300 grams. He also reiterates that Apple will be using Sony's micro OLED displays and says that Apple will be offering, quote, see-through AR experiences, and that the device will also be capable of delivering VR experiences. He does say that it will be portable, and more importantly, it's going to be independent with its own processors, sensors, and battery. Now, don't expect all this technology to be cheap, especially coming from Apple. It is expected to come at a premium price, as we've discussed before. He says it's going to be somewhere around $1,000 US, basically in the same price range as a higher-end iPhone. As far as what the next phase in 2025 might look like, the glasses product, he doesn't give a lot of details, but he does say that Apple isn't even in the prototype phase on that, but that they do want to deliver some sort of custom optical see-through AR experience. He says that product may have independent computing power and storage, but again, it's too early to say too much on that one. And then, of course, as you might imagine, the contact lens product, that is the ultimate goal. Not a lot of details on that. Of course, no prototypes. It's just probably in the early thoughts and planning stages. Some of those technologies do kind of exist right now, but they are a long way off, which is probably why he's giving it a 2030 release date. And that obviously could change. But the focus, he says, will be on bringing invisible computing to the experience. Lenses would likely rely on another device like an iPhone or some other device for their computing power and storage. The interesting thing about that, as I was thinking about it, is I would imagine that connectivity would all have to happen wirelessly to a contact lens. That's just crazy. If they can pull that off and make that happen, that will be really cool. You may remember there was a story about contact lenses that could actually get some energy from digital contact lens, getting some energy, some battery power from just the process of you blinking, which is just really cool. So these are the kinds of technologies that are out there, and I'm sure Apple is investigating and looking into. And just think about fitting some sort of micro or tiny battery into a contact lens. Just, it's kind of mind-blowing at this point, but this is the future we might be moving into, and if that happens by 2030, I just think that would be amazing. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a couple of show sponsors, starting with Helix Sleep. You know, for me, getting a good night's sleep is really important, and I really think one of the keys to that is a really good mattress. And finding that is not always easy. It also can be a big hassle. I am not a huge fan of the whole mattress buying process when going to a store. They make it deliberately confusing. You're dealing with salespeople. It can be super annoying, and it's really hard to get the exact right mattress. But Helix Sleep really changes all of that because they make it super easy to buy and find a mattress that's going to be perfect for you. What I loved about the service was that they offer a bunch of different mattress types. And to help you get the exact kind of mattress you want, they have this great process set up where you simply go through a simple quiz on their website. And it can work for a single person or it can work for you and your partner as well. They offer both options. And you walk through a series of questions about your sleep preferences and how you sleep. And dare I say, they make it actually pretty fun. And I took the quiz. It was great. And I prefer to sleep on my side. I like a little bit firmer feel to my mattress. And the quiz recommended me a Twilight model. And again, the experience, amazing. It gets shipped to you. The unboxing experience is unique and really, really fun. Again, it's actually fun buying a mattress. It's amazing to say, but it really is. It came in. I didn't have to go to a showroom. Delivery was quick and easy. The mattress has the perfect amount of firmness and support for me. It's soft and comfortable, and I love it. My pets love it. Everybody is getting a good night's sleep. So I can tell you, buying and getting a mattress from Helix, it's an amazing experience. If you're looking for a mattress, all you have to do, take the quiz for yourself. You order the mattress that's matched to you, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You never have to go to a mattress store again, and I think that's the best part. Helix is awesome, but you don't have to take my word for it. Helix was awarded number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by both GQ and Wired magazine. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but I have to tell you, I think you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows for MacCast listeners at helixsleep.com/MacCast. That's helixsleep, HELIXSLEEP.com/MacCast for up to $200 off all mattress orders and two free pillows. And a huge thank you to Helix Sleep for their support of the MacCast. I'd also like to take a moment to thank our show sponsor, Headspace. You know, something that I struggle with, and I think a lot of people also struggle with, is focus. I often have a million thoughts and ideas running through my head, and then you throw in things like just general life and the daily stresses it can bring, and it can really mess with your focus. And since I started using Headspace, it's been really helping me get better at focusing and ignoring distractions. Headspace offers guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. And I myself, I'm completely new to meditation. I really have or had no idea what I was doing or really how to get started, and Headspace made it super easy. One of my favorite features was when I first started up the app, it asked me what kind of meditation things was I looking for? What was I looking to get out of the meditations? And I definitely chose focus as one of my options, and it then crafted its recommendations to my options. And I started out using the Headspace's basics courses. And what was nice about this was they were simple 3-minute daily lessons that made it very easy to use and didn't feel too overwhelming. And it ended up being something that I could stick with. Because in the past, I've tried meditation, I've tried the breathing stuff that Apple wants me to do with my Apple Watch, and it's never really stuck with me. But this is really helping me. And after each session, I feel a lot more relaxed and I'm ready to focus on my tasks. And I'm learning the skills that I need to really focus. Plus, I love the integration with the health app and HealthKit. It helps keep me on track. I get notifications and reminders to go into Headspace and do my meditations. It is really great. And Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace can really help you feel better. If you're overwhelmed, Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation that you can take. You need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind down sessions that their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditations that you can do with your kids. Their approach to mindfulness can help reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. And Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, 600,000 five-star reviews, and over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you, on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel better, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/MacCast. That's headspace.com, HEADSPACE.com/MacCast for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditation for every situation. It's the best deal offered right now. Head to headspace.com/MacCast today. And a big thank you to Headspace for their support of the MacCast. A couple episodes back, we had a question about Mac OS mail and sort of navigating and quickly moving through the mail application. And I shared a couple of tips on using some keyboard shortcuts in Apple's mail app. Well, this past week, listener Daniel sent in some feedback and offered some great additional tips that I thought I would share with you. You may remember that one of the handy tips I shared was that you can use the keyboard command, command plus one of the number keys to quickly access items in your favorites. So if you want favorites, rather, if you want to access the first item, command one would access the first mailbox or item in your favorites list. If you wanted to access the fourth item, command four accesses the fourth item. And I mentioned that you could add 1 through 6. Daniel rightly pointed out that you can actually do 1 through 9, all the numbers on your keyboard less 0. Unfortunately, 0 doesn't go to 10. It'd be great if it went to 10, but it is 1 through 9. And what I didn't think about and really didn't mention in that episode, although I guess now in hindsight it seems a little bit obvious and maybe you already figured it out, but I didn't, you can actually add additional favorites to your favorites list, really any mailbox or folder within your mail accounts you can add to that list. You just right-click on the item or control-click on the item in the sidebar and choose Add to Favorites. You can also do it just from the menu by selecting the mailbox and choosing Add to Favorites. And then once it's up in that favorites list, now you can access it with that keyboard shortcut. But another really cool feature that Daniel pointed out and said that he was using is once you have an item in your favorites, you can also quickly move emails from your inbox or any other folder to one of those folders by using the keyboard shortcut Control Command and that number key. So say you wanted to move something back to your inbox, if your inbox was one of your favorites and your inbox was on favorite number one, I could select any mail message in mail and hit Command Control 1. Boom, that message would be moved right to my inbox. Now, let's take a little bit further and set up a favorites folder that maybe you want to set up as a follow-up folder. So all those emails that you're going through your email, it's something important. You need to follow up on it, but you don't really want to reply to it right now. You could create a mailbox or a folder and call it follow up. Add that to your favorites, say at, you know, position 3. And now when you're going through your inbox, when you encounter one of those items that you need to stash away, just get it out of your inbox and into that follow up folder. You could just hit Command Control 3. While you're on that message, and boom, it will go right into that folder and you can get to it later. So Daniel's been kind of using that. These are some really great tips. He also, though, did have a question, and I tried to look into this and I couldn't find the answer for Daniel. So here I am once again, turning to the community. He's asked us for his help. He noticed that in mail, if you select a message and then go up under the messages menu, there is a grayed out item called Move to Predicted Mailbox. And there is a shortcut, Control Command M, that will supposedly access this. And I was looking at this. This was at least in macOS Big Sur. I don't know how long this feature has been around. It sounds like it's been around for a little while. But I went through a lot of messages in my mailboxes, and every one that I selected when I tried to access this feature, it was grayed out. I'm assuming it's going to take advantage of some of the artificial intelligence that's built into Macs and iOS devices and things like that. When I read about it, it's supposed to like allow you to quickly move messages to a folder that already where you've already moved similar kinds of messages. So Apple would kind of keep track of, or the operating system would keep track of how you're filing your mail messages. And when it sees similar messages, it would be a quick way to automatically throw that in there. This is actually one of the reasons that I use Spark by Readle. Its mail client does suggest folders under its move command based on how you've moved messages in the past. And it's super, super handy because I'll have certain kinds of messages that I always move to the same folders. So say they're order receipts, they know that I'm going to move that to my receipts folder or my receipts mailbox where I kind of archive those things. So when I right click on it, it automatically says move to receipts and I can select that. I figured this was the similar feature in macOS Mail, but I haven't really seen it working. I thought I did in the past, but as Daniel pointed out, it doesn't seem to be doing that. So is there some trick we need to do to enable it? Some kind of training process we need to go through or turn on that we don't know about? I couldn't find anything through my Google Foo, but maybe your Google Foo is a little bit better than mine. So if it is, and you know the answer to this, shoot me an email, or better yet, send me an audio comment, and we'll get this answer for Daniel and the rest of the community, mattcast@gmail.com. You may remember on the last episode that we were once again talking about the rumor that future iPhones might or may no longer have a physical connector on them. As a matter of fact, we discussed it in this episode too, right? There's been this long-running rumor that Apple eventually wants to get rid of all of the ports, external ports, on their iPhone and just go with wireless charging, wireless data transfer, everything else, wireless recovery, all that sort of stuff. And every time this story gets mentioned or brought up, I get a bunch of emails and queries and responses like this one.
A longtime listener from Houston, Texas. One of your last Maccasts, you were talking about how Apple might drop the Lightning port from their iPhones, which I know they have been talking about a long time. I'm wondering how this will affect CarPlay, because basically, as far as I know, there's only one or two models that have wireless CarPlay and have some aftermarket solutions that basically deprecate millions of CarPlay vehicles because they couldn't use it anymore. Hey, just wondering how this is going to work. Thank you.
So there you have it. This is what comes up every single time we talk about killing the Lightning connector. And I'm going to refer this to this now as the CarPlay paradox, because Apple does have a little bit of a problem here. And thank you for sending in that audio comment, because I think it's absolutely correct. There is a big dilemma for Apple, and it's definitely one they're going to have a solution for. I can't imagine, like you said, that they would go out and simply break or deprecate the functionality of millions of people and with CarPlay, right? Apple has this CarPlay technology out there, and there are millions and millions of customers probably at this point that rely on that. And to just simply break it with a single upgrade, you know, obviously that's being a bit extreme because not everybody's going to upgrade to a new phone right away, but we obviously get the point. This is a dilemma. This is something that Apple is going to have to deal with. And as far as how they deal with it, I really don't know. You know, it does make me wonder if older head units maybe are wireless CarPlay capable, like the technology might be in there and it's something that could be enabled with a software update. That would be awesome. Maybe it's something just software restricted, but I doubt it. I'm not really sure. The thing is that CarPlay, wireless CarPlay, has been around since the introduction of iOS 9. That's 2015 when that technology was there. So you would imagine that a lot of the head units that went into place maybe had support for the technology. Maybe it just wasn't enabled for some reason. So that's one thought in theory. That's highly speculative, though, and I doubt that is the solution. The other thing I can think of is, as you mentioned, there are some aftermarket solutions to enable CarPlay, wireless CarPlay, on older units. Apple could maybe develop their own wireless adapter or dongle that you would plug into the USB port on the car to allow a wireless CarPlay connection. Those do exist. They're kind of expensive. Maybe Apple could release a lower cost version. It would then mean, and they'd still take some flack for it, that you would have to buy some sort of adapter. If it was $30 to $50, I think maybe they could get away with it. That could be an option. Another option could be maybe there's some future version of MagSafe that works with data. I don't know about those kinds of, you know, wireless or non-contact, really contactless technologies, but maybe they could also combine MagSafe with something like a smart connector. We did see some rumored images of iPhones with smart connectors. If the MagSafe cable was simply combined with a smart connector, so you have the puck and then the smart connector connections in the middle, and then a smart connector on the back of the iPhone right in the middle of the charging disk, that could potentially be a way to have a quote-unquote wireless, portless connection to the iPhone and still be able to maybe transmit data through a cable. So maybe it's just simply a new cable that you could plug in and it would work that way. Again, just speculating on all the things that I can think of. I'm sure there's members of the community that have ideas. And if you have an idea or thought on this, send in your thoughts. But those are just the things that I can think of. Apple for sure has created an issue for themselves, though. And it's interesting because generally this is the kind of thing that they like to avoid, right? They don't like to have to like sort of be restricted in how they develop things based on other technologies that are out there. They might not be fully in charge this time around with their own destiny when it comes to just simply killing off the Lightning connector. And that has to be amazingly frustrating for them. So I have to imagine Apple engineers are very well aware of the CarPlay paradox. And maybe that's why we're not seeing the Lightning connector going away. It could absolutely be the reason. The other part of this, though, and the other confusing piece of it is, to me, why the heck at this point has wireless CarPlay adoption been so slow? As I mentioned, iOS 9, 2015, wireless CarPlay. Here we are, 2021. Man, I'm even getting it off by a year. 2021, and there's not that many models of cars that have wireless CarPlay support. I looked up a report trying to find some numbers. In 2019, there were just 27 models of cars from three different car brands that offered wireless CarPlay. So a little bit better than just a couple, but 27 models, a lot of those very high-end models from BMW and those folks. In 2020 and 2021, the numbers are getting a lot better, but a lot of people don't have brand new cars, right? And so here we are 6 years later, and we're still attaching our iPhones to CarPlay like Neanderthals with a cable. That's just nuts. That definitely has to change. So I think probably the solution is some sort of somewhat affordable wireless adapter that can do CarPlay. Apple bringing that out in a nice little form factor that can just plug into your USB port. That's probably the interim solution. You know, nobody likes dongles, but, you know, when we change connector formats, be them wired formats or wireless formats, we have to have some sort of transitional product. So I think that's the way they would go. But, you know, I really don't know. And maybe somebody out there has a more creative solution and they'll share it with us. But definitely thank you for pointing this one out. And again, CarPlay paradox, folks. Want to move back to Apple Mail here for a second, and that's because I have a listener, Fernando, who is having an issue with his mail and could use some help. It has to do with the recovered messages folder that keeps appearing in the On My Mac section of his macOS mail. He's been trying to remove it. It's empty, doesn't have any messages in it. He deletes it, and every time he starts mail back up, it is coming back on him. And for those of you who may not be familiar, the recovered messages folder can sometimes appear after you do a Mac OS upgrade that also upgrades the mail library. So pretty much every major update kind of versions the mail library. Mac OS Big Sur was one of those. I'm assuming that's what's happened to Fernando. Usually the way it works is it's generally intended to give you an opportunity to review any of the recovered messages that it finds during the upgrade, and then you can take those and move them back into their normal locations, into their proper mailbox folders, or just clean them out. And then once you've done that, you should be able to remove this folder. You don't need it anymore, and you should be able to go about your life and your business and go on your way and not have to worry about it ever again. Obviously, that's not working in Fernando's case, and as you might imagine, it's really annoying, especially if you're a person like me, and it sounds like Fernando as well, who likes to keep a clean and tidy mailbox. So if this is happening to you, you do have another option. What you may need to do is rebuild your mailboxes, basically kind of restructure them or get them, you know, re-indexed and re-put that back together in the library. It's generally a pretty safe process. It's something that should have kind of low risk to do, but as you know, on the MacCast, we like to be safe. And so I would always recommend, before you do a mailbox rebuild, that you have a full backup of your Mac or your email before you do that. But once you've done it, it's a pretty easy process. All you have to do to rebuild your mailbox is just open up the Mail app, select the mailbox that you want to rebuild from the sidebar. You can either right-click on it and choose, or right-click, control-click on it, choose Rebuild, or go under the Mailbox menu and choose the Rebuild option with that mailbox selected, and then it will go through the process of rebuilding it. A couple little things to be aware of: when you rebuild an IMAP or an Exchange account, the attachments are actually deleted locally and then re-downloaded. And also, as the mailbox is being rebuilt, the mailbox will appear to be empty until the process is completed. So don't worry about that. You won't see any mail in there, and then it'll eventually just pop back in as it's rebuilt or after it's rebuilt. And once you've done that, that should take care of that problem with the recovered messages. So hopefully, Fernando, that works for you. If it doesn't, shoot me another email and let me know how things turned out. But hopefully that does work for you. I think for a lot of folks, that is the solution. So give that a try, and thanks for your email. I think I'm just going to throw out all kinds of terms or new phrases and terms on this episode of the MacCast. Well, maybe not new phrases, but kind of repurposed phrases. This time I want to talk to you about what I'm going to call forest for the trees troubleshooting. You know that old saying, I can't see the forest for the trees? And it's really about looking a little bit too closely at something. Well, this is something that I think often comes up when I'm working on trying to solve a problem, maybe troubleshoot or answer an email for someone in the MacCast community. And it's, again, not even something that just happens with the Mac or with technology or trying to troubleshoot iOS or macOS. It can also be any kind of problem that you might be trying to solve. I encounter this a lot in my coding or my programming. And it's just, it's often actually kind of worse when you have a lot of knowledge on a subject, a lot of deep knowledge on a subject, right? Your head immediately goes to some sort of complex problem or some complex cause. And the reason I'm bringing this up this week is that it manifested itself in an email question that I received from Daniel, who was trying to help his dad with an iPhone issue. His dad purchased a new iPhone mini a couple months ago and was having trouble with call volumes, basically being able to hear phone calls when he would hold the iPhone to his ear. And what was odd about this problem is that the phone worked fine when it was paired with a Bluetooth headset or when it was on speakerphone. It was only when he would hold it to his ear that he was having trouble hearing the conversation, and it didn't matter what the earpiece volume was at. He could set the earpiece volume at maximum, and he just really couldn't hear. The volume just wouldn't go up. And so, like many of us would do, Daniel went online and he did some research, and he found other people having similar issues. But the problem was that there weren't any real resolutions other than, hey, play around with the accessibility settings, physically try to clean the iPhone earpiece, maybe that's related. And these are all things that I would have thought of as well. And so Daniel reached out to me and said, hey, have you ever heard anything like that? Are there other folks in the community having these issues? And of course, I went online and did my own searching, thinking there's got to be some sort of technical problem, maybe something wrong with an iOS update, whatever it might be. And so I tried to help him out. I asked him if his dad had confirmed, or if he confirmed with his dad that he was adjusting the volume while he was on the call, because I think one of the confusing things is that if you just, you know, increase the volume when you're not on a phone call, it's actually controlling the volume of the phone. To actually control what's in the earpiece, you need to actually up the volume when you're on that call. And so that's the only thing I can think of outside of just, you know, hey, maybe it's broken. Maybe you need to take it into the Apple store and have it checked out. Probably a hardware failure, right? Well, it turned out that Daniel did ask his dad, hey, do you need to clean it? Is there any dirt or dust or lint inside that speaker that maybe just needs to be cleaned out? And his dad said, well, no, because there's a screen protector on it. And that was the indication that, wait a minute, It's probably a little bit more of a simple solution than we're really thinking. His dad, this was his first iPhone with a notch in it, and he didn't realize that the screen protector had actually been installed upside down. He didn't understand that it needed to go on in a certain way, and of course, that had inadvertently completely blocked the speaker hole. So, an honest mistake, I think. You know, anybody could have made this mistake and just didn't even realize it. So the point is, in all of this, that, you know, with technology, sometimes we immediately assume that there's this complex technical problem to be solved, right? And, you know, there's also what I like to call or think of as coincidence bias, right? That some event has just recently happened, and of course that has to be the cause of the issue. And this comes up a lot when an iOS update or a macOS update has come out. And it's a logical conclusion in a lot of cases, right? Your machine's running fine, you run an update, and something breaks, something happens, right? One directly relates to the other. It can't just be a coincidence, right? That would be crazy. But a lot of times it can just be a coincidence. But again, forest for the trees, right? We don't go to that conclusion because, you know, naturally one has to lead to the other. So sometimes I think it's good to have a reminder when we're doing troubleshooting that it can help to just step back a bit, take a breath, and basically view the forest. You know, are we missing something completely simple and completely obvious? You know, my machine won't power up. Oh, I kicked loose the power cable plugged into the wall. Did we check that first? No, we're probably immediately thinking, oh my God, my power supply's died, right? Those sorts of things. Or at least I think that way. Maybe this is unique to me and you're just shouting at your phone right now thinking, no, I always check the simple solution first. Or, you know, a cable came loose or the cable just died, right? Sometimes it can just be something as simple as replacing a cable. You know, the lightning port didn't explode or blow up. It's just replacing the cable. Or, hey, my daughter has an old Bluetooth keyboard and set a book on top of it after it reconnected back to my Mac, which is on the other side of the wall from her room. And that's why I can't type anything on my Mac or why an E keeps typing repetitively, and I don't really know what's going on. Yeah, it's a little too specific. Yeah, that actually happened to me. I was sitting here one day, and I literally thought my keyboard was broken, or I was being hacked, or something was going on. And I had given her one of my old wireless Apple keyboards, and it just had not been completely unpaired from my Mac, and it reconnected. It was, I'll be honest with you, it was about an hour of troubleshooting on my side to figure out she had walked away from her computer and set this book on the keyboard, and it was just repeatedly typing a key. So, forest for the trees, troubleshooting, you know, just remember, take a step back. If you really think about it a lot of times from what's the simplest reason this could be happening, you know, in the case of this iPhone, hey, something's blocking the earpiece. Something's physically blocking the earpiece, whether it be dirt or a screen protector. So just a great reminder to all of us to not get too in the weeds sometimes when we're doing our technology troubleshooting or trying to help someone out troubleshooting an issue. Okay, last thing that I have for you today is a thing of the moment. This one comes from the MacCast Patreon Slack. So if you are a supporter of the MacCast through Patreon, patreon.com/MacCast, you can join our Slack channel. And there's a bunch of folks in there who help each other out with tips and tricks and tech support and all kinds of stuff, just general conversation, a bunch of MacCast folks in our community kind of geeking out. It's a lot of fun, and it's one of the benefits to being a supporter on Patreon. But LaDude over there sent in this cool little app, and I am not a huge user of the Touch Bar on my 16-inch MacBook Pro. We know the Touchmar might be going away. It hasn't been a huge success. And I think part of the reason is just, you know, it's not generally all that useful. It can be a little inconvenient. Stuff is hidden away a lot of times. There are some cool features, though. I use it every once in a while, but I'm just not a heavy user of it. And so I'm always interested in apps and things that might make it a little bit more useful. And this one kind of falls in that category. And best of all, it's free. Well, technically, it's gratuityware. So if you do like it, I would encourage you to support the developer. You can go on the website and actually make a donation, give them some money. It's kind of like shareware back from the old days, right? If you like it, free to use, but if you like it, support the developer so they keep making cool stuff. And this one's called Touch Switcher. It's at hazeover.com/touchswitcher.html. I'll have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com, so don't worry, you don't have to remember that. But basically what it does is it adds an icon to the touch bar, an app icon that lets you see the open apps that are in your dock along with a list of your recent apps. So the apps that are currently open are kind of brighter, and then dimmer ones are ones that you've recently opened and quit out of. And you can tap that little icon, and then you can switch to or launch any of them right from the touch bar, which is pretty cool. Is it faster than using Command Tab and using Spotlight as an app launcher? Probably not. Is it a little bit more tactile and visually stimulating? Potentially. Does it make the touch bar just a bit more fun and useful? I would say definitely. So it's one of those things that's worth checking out. I threw it on my Mac. I'll see if I continue to use it. Honestly, I probably will just keep using the Command Tab and Spotlight, but it was a good recommendation, so I'm making it this week's thing of the moment. I'll also mention that the developer, same developer, Hazeover, does have an app called Hazeover, which is a distraction dimmer. So it basically puts focus on whatever your current app is and then dims everything else back in the background, and it even has some controls where you can adjust how dark or, you know, basically the brightness of the apps that are in the background. A lot of people are very into these kinds of things that help you focus and avoid distractions. So if you're into that, you can check that out at the website as well. And best of all, if you are a Set App subscriber already, it is part of Set App, so you already have access to it. So that's another cool app you can check out as you're over there checking out Touch Switcher, because I know not everybody has a Touch Bar Mac. So if you don't, there's another recommendation for you to check out in this week's thing of the moment. But with that, that is going to do it for the show for this week. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for both Mac and iOS. You can get more information and details on their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number is 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. And if you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find me on Instagram, MacCast, over there. But with that, that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.